Thank you. Last session. This is the last Q&A. And this is the truth. Oh, my, you have all tonight to meditate. At least people meditate. And in the morning, you have to see schedule for the morning. So it's 6 o'clock.
Time's
up. Okay, yeah. So the morning is essential, right? Cardiovascular and arms. Okay, excellent. So here we go, the first question. Here we go. My body hormone is upside down. How can meditate help? Remember, your body is one thing, your mind is something else. So even your body hormone is upside down. I don't know what that means. Maybe if you come and move to Australia, which is down under, and you find your whole mother in the right way again. So, it means all sorts of stuff going on. But if that happens, remember you can always make peace. Be calm, be gentle with what's going on in your body. Always do that. Sick, hot, cold. Yes, something you can do. If it's something which a doctor can help with, fine. If it's something which is just, who knows, make peace with these things. Don't fight them. It's part of life. So, I managed to give the nimitz of how long it takes to dextrose vagina from the faster to the slower side. How fast? The fastest is you can get it tonight, the slowest is about 20 more lifetimes. Anything. I don't know why people want time scales for these things. Okay, a nice one. There are hundreds of languages around the world, but a smile speaks them all. Thank you for being such a smiling one. It's so true, you go to any country in the world, and you smile, and you'll be understood. But be careful if you smile at Donald Trump. Some people don't like smiles. What is the correct posture for the head, neck, during sitting walking? I keep getting neck aches. Well, you just find out the best way. You experiment. So sometimes when you're walking, lay down. Stand up. And experiment. Usually there should be no problem with the neck. See a child pass it off to find the best way. But for most people, you close your eyes, you feel your neck just a little bit now, a little bit now, or a little bit. Oh, that's nice. You feel yourself. That's the only way to do it. There is no correct posture which suits everybody. If you think you have a neckache, imagine being reborn as a giraffe. Being next question. Never to come on and off. Very hard to sustain it. How to deal with it? You know the answer. Let go. Relax. I told the answer this morning or something. It's still from this school. Sitting there. Never to come up. Have a look. And you go, oh. It goes to watch and run away. And one of my friends, of course, really died just a year or two ago, but he was a professional photographer working for one of the newspapers in Perth. And nothing much happened in Perth, but there was a rumour going around, a tip, that, who was it, a Kylie had had a nervous breakdown, and that she was hiding in Cable Beach Resort, in Broome, that's north of West Australia. So his editor said, no, just go up, she didn't find her. It's a beautiful place. So having a paid excursion up to a Table Beach Resort, he didn't sort of keep a question, he was up there in a flash. He had to do his job. It's a beautiful place. He had to do his job. So there's no way you can go in the main entrance and just knock on the counter and say, oh, it's Kylie Minogue here. She's hiding. She has security. So what he did, he went down the rear end of this big resort, climbed over the fence, and he went through the bushes with his with his pseudonymous camera, just like a real paparazzi. You don't get to do paparazzi stuff in Perth because there's no celebrities there. Or maybe me. He was calling through the bushes. He didn't know where to go. And he called through and he looked through the bushes. He saw her. The rumor was true. And so, very slowly and carefully, he managed to pick up the camera and click, 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 and crawl away again without her knowing. And of course, he said that was the most exciting time of all my photographic career working in newspapers. Anything else was boring, but this was so exciting. He said, I could not have done it without you, I don't know. He told me about H.M. Charles still photographing. We had to take a picture of him with the animals on. And he was vindicated around the world, his photo. So, you know, for once he was bored, he got the photo of his career. And only because he knows how to watch images. The same thing. It's like you see the film star coming and opening. You just be quiet. Watch. You make a sound. And she will know she'll run off back into her room and come out again. So you have to be so quiet. So sad. If he hits you, you won't get your photo. If you're very quiet, the photo will come out and stay with you. You have your photo of your career. Nimitz. Because Nimitz are very shy. They'll run away if they know you're looking at them. So imagine they're very shy beings. So when they come out, you release them. And they don't come and stay much longer. Next question. When I concentrate on my breath, I get strange sensations in my body. Compared to if I concentrate on my aches and pains, this is natural. Thank you. Looks like you get strange sensations in your body no matter what you do. Concentrate on your breath, you get strange sensations. Concentrate on aches and pains. No, less things to do. Don't concentrate on anything. Try the Emperor's Three Questions method. Whatever's in front of your mind right now, weird pain, strange stuff, address, whatever comes up, just be with it. Without choosing, just being kind. And then you'll find the body relaxes because you're not choosing, you're not forcing, you'll find everything relaxes and gets really peaceful. That's the way to meditate, especially if you've got problems like that. How is the results of meditation related to the goal of Buddhism of not to be born again? Exactly. You're so peaceful. You don't want anything. There's nothing to propel you forward. You've run out of gas, run out of petrol in your car. How can a car go any further when it's got no petrol? And the fuel which keeps you going from life to life is called wanting, craving. So, you know, you can be a rich person here, maybe next life, not being a rich person. Maybe next life, person in the United States. Maybe next life, maybe a girl, next life, maybe a boy, next life rich, maybe try being poor, next life be a monk. No luck. This is enough. No more of anything. Because we always think the grass on the other side of the fence is greener. If I get reborn, say, not as a Malaysian, as a Singaporean. Or as a Singaporean, as an Australian. Or as an Australian, go as an English, or English United States, or whatever. Because it's all exactly the same. The grass on the other side of the fence always looks greener, but it ain't. It tastes the same. Maybe it's your last life, so you don't want to get reborn, and you know all wanting, even not wanting, causes rebirth. You have no wanting, no not wanting. It's totally at peace. Totally content, not wanting anything else in the whole world that you don't get reborn. Next question. How to apply meditation to help my studies and exam preparations? Very easy. When you get into deep meditation, sort of into the jhanas especially, then you can actually visualize the exam paper coming tomorrow. And visualize with your psychic powers. When you come back, you might have all the questions and get the answers. So easy. Or some of the other psychic powers, you know, you can develop the reading from other people's minds. So you sit down in the exam room, and you know who's a smart aleck in the class. So if you read the big question, if you read the sort of the top of the class's mind, you get the answer. Another way is you can learn how to astral travel. So you're sitting there, and first of all you read the paper, you sit there, astral travel, go home, get out of the book, turn on your computer, get the answers, and astral travel back. Through your room. It's so easy. Yeah, it's cheeky, but you can't get caught. Now, you mean that your teacher's got psychic powers too. But now, honestly, that one of the things we realize with meditation, you know how our mind works, how our brain works. And we know if our mind is tired, we can't perform well. Actually, I haven't done this one, but I'm sure you've heard me do this so many times. Well, I'm doing this for years and years. I hold up a cup, how heavy is my cup? And someone says, oh, I don't know, 150 grams, that's not what I mean. The longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. After another 10 seconds, I'm already starting to wait. Another 10 seconds, I've heard. Another 5 minutes, I'll be making it stupid. Well, what should I do when this gets too heavy? To hold it comfortably. You pull it down, and you rest your arm. Well, that feels better already. Once my arm is rested and recovered, I can pick it up. Wow, it actually doesn't feel heavy anymore. It only feels heavy when I keep on holding it. And that is stress. Stress in life is nothing to do with how much weight you are holding. It's nothing to do with how much business you have to do, how many responsibilities, how many duties. I was telling my attendants all my responsibilities. Here they go. Okay, start off with putting you on a monastery. I'm the head monk there, the boss, the teacher. I'm a training monk, a lot of lay people, a lot of infrastructure. That's number one. I'm also just looking after Chantamo, another $5 million property just on the other side of the road. We're also buying a bit more property just a little to the north of Chantamo. We also have our nuns monastery, just finished looking after the nuns. Big building project there, just completed, it looks wonderful, there's 11 nuns there, and I've got to teach them. And then I've also got our city centre. And that city centre, every weekend, thousands of people go through there. We're just developing our new website, so all these teachings can be made available much more easily. And then I'm also the founding president of the Australian Sangha Association, where we try and get all the monks and nuns, all the traditions in Australia together, to work together for the common cause of promoting Buddhism, protecting Buddhist interests with the government. It's a national body, so we can all work together. And I'm also, I won't say the ones, you've also got, like in Singapore, the Brown Centre, which I suppose we've got named after me. I've also got the Brown Centre in Colombo, in Sri Lanka, it's called franchising. And I drive about here whenever I can, but I can't come here more often than once a year. It's because I've got all these other places to go to. And I'm also a huge group in Thailand, also a spiritual advisor of the Buddhist Society in Victoria, and we just started a new monastery just in Newbridge, in South Melbourne, which I have to look after, always asking me problems and consulting, goodness knows what else. And I'm also a spiritual director of the Sankey Monastery, just out in Sydney. And I'm also, the BF, I'm still the spiritual patron of the Buddhist Fellowship in Singapore. And I'm also, where else is there? Oh, Indonesia. I'm also, what Hanneke says, the turbocharger of any ASCO Foundation. When I go there, it's just a big boost. And, what else am I? London, yeah, we're just starting a nice monastery, and Kampa Bhikkhuni projects in London. So I've got lots of responsibility. I also write books, counsel people, look after people. I do so much. Oh, I've got in Hong Kong as well. That's Bodhidharma International Foundation in Hong Kong. Where else is doing the wrong? Oh, then there's Lake North Korea, and then there's a White House, and then there's... That's so much jobs to do. So, my workload is actually should be very high, but because I don't have to let things go, you can relax. I say, I've had a bigger business. So, my responsibility is what don't we? I put it down. Because I put it down, I'm going to pick it up again this month. Study. Many young people, they're doing an assignment late on into the night. Work on the computer. Hours go by, they produce nothing. Why? Their brain is dead. Because they're forcing, they're too tired, brain is not energized, and they're wasting so much time. It's much better as a student, watch your time, turn off the computer, forget about the assignment, meditate. Half an hour, just really get yourself still. When you go back, you have wasted half an hour, but not really wasted, because it's an investment. Now your mind is creating ideas, you can write up the assignments really quickly. High quality. Saving work. If you push your head against the wall trying to finish a project in time, you get so stressed, you mess up, waste time. If you can just meditate for a quarter of an hour in stressful situations, just let go, put it down, relax. When you get back to the project, you get 3 hours work done in two. You make out the time. And so alone, Harvard Business School calls it an investment of time. By meditating half an hour, the lunchtime. An investment. Kids, you do that. Invest. So when your brain is tight, relax. Push. It's a total waste of time. Gives you more time, more stress. You cannot reach your potential. So because of that, I remember going to this Jewish school about a week before the exams. This is university entrance exams. I said, listen, I gave that seminary. So, the day before the exams, just go out, watch a movie, have a walk by the beach, just relax, play a game of tennis, anything except study the day before the exams. That was when, a couple of weeks later, I got this letter from the headmaster. Now, he was a Jew, I'm a Buddhist. He said, thank you. These are our best results ever. They topped the table of schools in Perth that year. I said, thank you. I said, well, it works. Of course it works. So, day before the exam, put your books away. You've got to prepare your brain. Energize it. Give it some happiness. Relax it. And then you finally go to the exam room and then you're fresh. Those kids, it's later about a month for example, study, all good, remember this. They're just so tired by the time they get to the exam room, they don't perform well. It's a simple thing. That is how it helps yourselves. I had difficulty falling asleep for the first 2 nights due to restless thoughts. Also, couldn't sleep on the afternoons. As a result, I am having tension headaches on the left side of my head. When I sit early, the only obvious object is a headache, and I can't be brave enough to watch the bed. That's a please help. You can't sleep at night, you can't sleep in the afternoon. Well, answer's obvious, sleep in the morning. You have quite a one, eh? Forget about, the breakfast and the lunch. And no one's watching, you can sneak into the restaurant and talk to something, or take a cab up to the top, there's lots of restaurants up there. But, the point is that you try to sleep and you can't. I did ask that thing this morning, this afternoon, is don't try to sleep, just relax. And just in the bed, but no, want to sleep. Just want to be comfortable, that's all. Let's think about drawing the beautiful sun. That way you can see. The more you try, the more you can't. It is difficult for me to sleep if there's a little bit of sound or light. Tried meditating to sleep, but did not really work well for me. Tried earplugs and eye covers, but they are really uncomfortable. What can I do to have a peaceful sleep? Okay, if you go underneath the bed, go under there. You can cover yourself in pillows, get small pillows. Actually, how do these ears do? They are, right? So, number one for ear plugs, because I mentioned it to a few people, this is a bit maybe an advertisement, but it really works for me because I could never really go to sleep or meditate in an aircraft. It's just too noisy. I don't know why I could do that. But then one day, one of my friends said, the thing for you is like the really good earplugs. Because in the places like Western Australia, there's so many mines, they have to wear these earplugs, otherwise they go deaf because all the machinery is so loud in a confined space. And the shop is called like the audiologist. Like audiologist, audiologist. And there's bound to be many in KL audiologists. They mostly do like hearing aids. But then also do your earplugs as well, which are molded to your ear cavity. I went there and somebody was paying for it and they just put this what's it like silicone in your ear, wait a bit to dry up, a minute or two, pull it out, and they had the mold of your ear hole. And it's so interesting that both ears are totally different shapes. So they've got one for the right ear, one for the left ear. And my little ear plugs, they've got little red marks on right, half of right, and blue is for the left. I don't know why I said blue is for the left, but that's what it is. And so someone offered it to me, so why not? And so I tried them the first time on an aircraft. And I said, I meditate now. So I sat down, put them in to meditate, and I fell asleep. That was really good. And as soon as I woke up, I thought, wow, this is good. I just fell asleep. So obviously, usually as soon as you wake up, I want to go to the toilet. So I went to go to the toilet, and that's when I remember thinking, this aircraft is so quiet. I travel around the lot, I don't know. And only then I realised I still have my earplugs in. They are so comfortable that very often you forget them in. So those earplugs, now, they're not that expensive, and they're really worth it. If you have trouble sleeping, or you go travelling, or you've got sort of a wife, and bang, 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 put them in. That will save your marriage. So audiologists, earplugs, molded to your ear. Because I agree with you, I remember sometimes trying those ones you get really cheap, a bit of foam, squashing and putting it, they're really uncomfortable. So they're uncomfortable ones, and the other ones are really good. And the light. Those iPads, I don't know, they work for me anyway. You know those iPads, we can't see anything. I give them to people who think they're imagining limiters. Because they know it's not an limiter, it's some light shining through the window. They put this iPad, they can't be limiters, okay? You can't see. So I use that to sort of skillful means of remembering. So if you really can't see because of the noise is probably the biggest thing which stops you sleeping. Because you use noise to wake yourself up in the morning. With the bells, gong, or the alarm clock, or your smartphone, that tells you there's a call. Ding, ding, ding. So that actually is really penetrating sound. So if you get your earplugs, ones which are comfortable, you will solve that problem. So you have to go business somewhere, strange hotels, sometimes. I don't know why people do this. Actually, it's in Singapore, but not a BS. One night I arrived there, and they put me in a room above a nightclub. And there were parties at about 2 o'clock in the morning. Do you now? It was actually the Singapore terminal on Duku Road. It was one of the things, one of the little things they brought over the top of the mountain. Really crazy. Anyway, nowhere street there, really now. So usually I take my earplugs with me because I don't know where I can sleep. And places like here, this is fine. BF is fine. Sometimes you don't know where you're going. So anyway, that's a nice way to get a peaceful sleep. The other way to get a peaceful sleep, many people have told me this, surprisingly, they listen to my talks. And no one said to me, so please go to sleep. It honestly happens to people like that. And I said, they can't be that boring. And honestly, it emerges, the voice is very calm and reassuring and safe. And that's actually what I go to sleep. But I don't know, if it takes you to sleep, I'm happy. I'm not that proud. As long as it helps you. However it helps you, I don't mind. If it takes you to sleep, fine. If my talks don't take you to sleep, download some talks on the Abhidhamma. Can't explain what was one had to observe past lives. So easy. You get out your photo album on your iPhone and click it. Oh, there was me last year. There was me 2 years ago in London. There was me, that's your past lives. So easy to access. A couple of clicks to the button and you've got your past lives. First of all, you won't meditate pretty deeply. That's the first thing. So you're very peaceful, really good energy, very happy, nice limiters, minimum. And then coming out of meditation, enjoy your limiters, don't spoil it then. And you just come out, oh, it's so nice. Watch my earliest memory and see what happens. But sometimes it's quite shocking. Like this Malaysian lady in Perth. She had no good meditation, she decided to give us a try. Yeah. Hey, my deep meditation is coming out. What's my Buddhist memory? And straight away, she was back as a newly born baby, just suckling at her mom's womb. Maybe 3 days old. And she looked up at her mom and got the shock of her life. That was not her mother. It wasn't her mom. And it was a very clear experience. So she came out of her meditation, came to see me, went to see that we told what had happened, and said, this was so clear, I was only a few days old maybe, it was a very clear memory, and I was looked up, and it wasn't my time, rather holding me. Have I been adopted? And she was really concerned. And I told her, well, I don't know. When the retreat finishes, then go and see your mum. Now don't just blurt out, mum, have I been adopted? Get the small talk first of all, then everyone just nice and comfortable. And she did that. Then she thought it was the right time to do the conversation. I said, brother, mum, how do you mean, my mother? And I said, what on earth are you talking about? And then she described the experience in deep meditation. Of basically reliving the time when she was breastfeeding, looking up at that woman who wasn't her mother. And her mother was really intrigued and asked, give me a whole description of what you saw. And after giving that description, her mother was just shell-shocked. She said, I am your mother. I gave birth to you. That was such an amazingly accurate description of your wetness. I came from a very high-class family in KL, and we hired a woman to feed you. How was your mother? We hired a wet nurse to feed you. I lived for the first week or two, and I'm so amazed that you could get that memory up. It was only the first weeks of your life. And I'm really impressed, both the mother and the daughter, that that was a real memory. Because it was not what you expected. So, that's what happens with this past life or early life memories, but then you say, earlier please. See what happens next. That's the interesting stuff. But a warning. Some of my students have done that. A couple of them said, Ajahn Brahm, I never want to be there ever again. And they told me why. I realized it was my mistake. I should give them a bit more instructions. Because they get in their past life, you know, when they were a baby, which I don't know why that happens, but a newly born baby, earlier please, either in the womb, or if you're earlier please, you should only one go, you get your closest memory from your previous lives. The death moments. The revisiting of that one is so close and so powerful. And dying is unforgettable. So, they said it was so unpleasant. They were back there, you didn't have these past life experiences or other life experiences through reflection. You are right back there. You are as close as much, you are right there again. Experiencing it all over again. Feeling the pain, feeling the pressure, being able to look around. And this is very disturbing. Now, we're living in a time which is usually very unpleasant. So, if that ever does happen to you, you know, you've got good meditation, earliest memory please, and you get a bad memory, all you need to do is very quickly say, earlier please. And the reason why that works is in that particular state, your mind is just so, they say in the text, malleable, workable. You tell it what to do, it does it immediately, without any hesitation. Your mind is just like a well-trained dog. Sick. Stand. Hey now. No, it's not the dogs, they're just so well-trained. This is like your mind in this way. That's why I give you a text, they're malleable, workable. So that's what we do, you just give it a construction that follows immediately. So all you can say is 30 please, and then you go back before your test. And that's the interesting part, because it's actually quite pleasant. Then you can look around and ask all the questions, and that we will work. And the reason we do that, we might encourage that, because so many people who say, there's no proof of reincarnation. Say, it's just a myth. Just an old belief of thousands of years ago, 100 years ago, and it's not true. But, if you can remember your past life, you remember it clearly. At least that's one person who knows is the truth. Absolutely. And that changes a lot about how we live in our world. I say, if all the leaders of our world could understand that they would get reborn, that they will come back to this planet, they'll do more to stop climate change. Mr. Trump is going to come back. And he'll have to deal with what he does to this climate. He's going to suffer for it if he doesn't take proper action. As with everybody else. You don't escape when you die, you come back again. So that's one reason I want more people to understand, to be able to access past life. So there's no issue. You know, even the Catholic Church believed in reincarnation until, I don't know, which is about 584 AD. The Pope at the time, I remember his name, it was, the Pope at the time believed in reincarnation. The Emperor at the time, in Constantinople, was Justinian, and Justinian ordered the Pope to ban reincarnation, to declare it as a heresy. So the emperor, the Roman emperor, so they're basically Constantine, ordered the Pope to declare reincarnation a heresy. The Pope at the time refused and was put in jail by the emperor for 1 year. So in those days you could put the emperor in jail. Put the Pope in jail, the emperor did that. And after 1 year, was the emperor called the Fifth Council of Nicaea, which, by this time, the Pope had enough of jail, and agreed to declare the incarnation heresy in Christianity. Up until that time, 5th or 6th century, it was accepted as a truth. So that's known history. Even the Pope wanted to have the incarnation as part of the truth. It was actually the emperor who actually banned it. So that's actually stated here. When I am watching my breath, I find myself controlling the breath while I'm just observing. Is that normal? How do you avoid being in control freak? Thank you. When you first watch the breath, yes, you will control it. But just imagine watching it from a distance. So the breath is over there, and you're watching it from over here. So that means you can't control it so much. So you just, it's as like watching it through the window, rather than actually being in the house. Whatever trick it is, it gets some space between you and the breath. So you're not right inside of it. It's not your breath, it's the body doing the breathing. Then after a while, yes, it's the first to come aware of it, it's unnatural because you're controlling the little body to let it go, and the breath becomes normal again. It's actually as you're breathing now when you're not watching it. So it's a very common problem, but very easy to solve. Sometimes you don't know what you're doing, it becomes natural after a while because you get used to it. We shared a few cases of people who had suffered from serious illness, e.g. cancer, and they actually get better, or even recover fully from meditating for a short period of time. How did they manage to do it? Especially for those who have no prior experience of meditation. For example, I took my sister. Please share the details. Thank you very much. It's because they followed the instructions. And they have confidence that it works. If you have confidence that it works, you actually do it properly. But if you think, well, there's a lot of bunker, you can't really feel better that way. And so you just go sitting here thinking about the football, worrying about the government, or not even sitting here at all, but going outside, checking your SMSs, or just going out, having a walk, wasting time. It is right from there, so not wasting time anymore, it's important. So because you give it importance, because you've got cancer, that's why many people, when they got cancer, they would say, why? They've also not so much effort in striving it, but care into their meditation. They're meticulous about it. They don't worry about it, so meditate tomorrow. Most importantly, really put focus on it. Ajahn, can we teach a hyperactive 3-year-old child to do sitting meditation? Please advise how to do it. Straight jacket. Yeah, try it now. No, it's not the nature of 3-year-olds that meditate. So that's why you just have to wait for one until they get to an age when they can be a little bit more calm and a little bit more able to meditate. So this is having a 3-year-old or 3-year-old, that's just what they like. We're all like that. Don't think they're hyperactive, they're all hyperactive. It's just a learning about the world, getting an energy. Discovery, it's part of the brain, just developing. But after a while, we tend to calm down a bit. That's one of the reasons why people say, Ajahn Brahma, as a peak retreat center, can't we have like temporary ordinations, seminar ordinations? So I can leave my kids there for 4 weeks while I come on holiday here, and I'm going to look after them, they're really safe. Free daycare, free childcare for 1 month, and afterwards they'll learn some Buddhism, which was so wonderful about that. And I have to deal with all of your scallywag kids, hyperactive, messing around. Oh, no way. It's a great deal, isn't it? There's some people that offer that. They have temporary ordinations for novices. What a wonderful idea that is. You know, you're really naughty kids. They're driving you crazy. Instead of a 2-week novice ordination, SBJ or something, and you go to Australia to visit me, you just go over to Europe and see the sights. No kids to worry about, they're pretty safe. They're in the monastery for 2 weeks. Or even better, you know, you can take your husband and say, darling, it's really good if you do a temporary ordination. So they're in the monastery for 2 weeks, you can go to Europe with your girlfriends and have a wonderful time. Knowing your husband is not going to cheat on you because he's in the emotion. So I don't like every organization, it's not going to be easy. Ajahn Brahma, is Nirvana another dimension? Or another dimension? Is Nirvana nothingness? I can't understand that this nothingness comes. Peace, but how is this associated then, Ajahn? This is the simile given by the Buddha to Vajracchana. It's called the Agni Vajracchana Sutta. Because this wanderer asked a similar question, what the heck is Nirvana? So the Buddha said, look at this oil lamp. There is a flame there. Now, that flame is conditioned, its cause is dependent on three things. The wick, the oil and the heat. Those three things come together, the wick, the oil, the heat, you have the flame. Now, says the Buddha, if one of those causes stops, such as the oil is all used up, or the wick is all burnt out, or the wind comes and blows out the heat. If any of those three causes, the oil, the wick, or the heat, is taken away, what happens to the flame? It goes out. In which way does it go out? Does it go to the north, the south, the east, or the west? Does it go into the heaven realm with flames if they behave themselves and done good service like cooking your lunch? Or does it go into the hell realm with flames if it's been naughty and burned down your house? Where do flames go when they are extinguished? And whatever, that's a stupid question. It doesn't apply, it just goes out, that's all. And so that is just the same. As with a human being once they're enlightened. The causes have been taken away. So, just like a flame before, it doesn't go anywhere. It just, it goes out. And in the time of the Buddha, every child would understand that. Because the word for Nibbana was the word used by everybody to say the oil lamp had gone out. Mummy, the oil lamp was divided. Well, light is again, darling. So that was what it meant. It was a word taken from modern life, or from everyday life, used in a metaphysical sense at the end of the journey through samsara of the being. Extinguished, it didn't go anywhere. Causes have now been extinguished. So, nothing left. That is Nirvana. Do you understand? No, you don't. Okay, we'll try anyway. That's what I'll tell that story. One of my favorite stories about Yang Chao. He started to get really sick, and when he got sick, us Western monks, because we started actually looking at the old texts, not the traditions in Thailand, but how Buddhism was in the time of the Buddha. And there we found, in monasteries in the time of the Buddha, they had saunas. Saunas were not invented in Sweden. They were invented in India 25 centuries ago. Believe it or not. And, so we thought, let's build a sauna so we can invite Ajahn Chah over once a week to take a sauna for his health. That was not really the reason, that was the excuse. The real reason was to get our teacher every week to come visit us. And it worked so perfectly. Once we finished the sauna, building it ourselves, Ajahn Chah would come every week to take a sauna for his health, and when he came into our monastery, he'd always hear a talk. Brilliant. So one day, he came first of all to give a talk, and quite honestly, so often when Ajahn Chah gave the talk, it was complete rubbish. I was saying that to my teacher, I lived with him. It was hopeless, boring, what's he going on about? But every now and again he'd say something amazing. And it was worth waiting all those minutes and hours for those brilliant insights and teachings. But sometimes he was just really on the ball, on the spot, and everything was so inspiring. This one day, the talk he gave was, one of his best. And after the talk, I was so inspired, so happy, just so uplifted, that I thought, I'm not going to help my teacher today, no, with his shower. I'm going to go around the back of the hall where it was quiet and meditate. To use that inspiration. And of course, if you meditate really inspired, you sit down, you have such amazing meditations once you're inspired. It's a great way to start. So I meditate, I don't know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, or whatever. Because you don't worry about the time when you have a really deep meditation that came up. As soon as I came out, wow, that's brilliant. Really full of energy, no hindrances, really clear. Wow, that's a good one. And of course, the first thing I thought was gratitude to my teacher. Maybe I could still do some little service for him. So I stood up and walked towards the sauna. And I realized pretty quickly I was too late. Because I saw Ajahn Chah finish his sauna dress, walking the other direction, going to his car to take him back to Wapakhon. But the path was very narrow. There was no choice, we were going to cross. So as we get closer, he was coming towards me with a couple of Thai ladies. I was going towards him. That's when he stopped and he looked at me. And I knew that he was inside my head, reading my mind. You could feel it, not sensitive enough. I've been meditating one time. You could feel it inside. Now that monk did have doubts, he was reading my mind. And for once, I did not mind. I was actually quite happy, quite proud of my peaceful, beautiful mind just coming out of a nice meditation. Come and have a look, teacher. He did. You see, my face was really clear. And I just had a really good meditation. So he got out of his mind, he looked at me, and he tried his hardest to just push me over the edge into enlightenment, to give me an unhappy experience. He knew my mind was really clear, he went to be really pure and peaceful. Just give me some time. So he looked at me, and quite fiercely, really holding my eyes. That's a full name. Ajahn Ramishwar. Baba Wangsa is a full name. Baba Wangsa! And he captured you with his eyes. You just couldn't move. Baba Wangsa! Why? You just asked me that one little question. Why? And I answered after a few seconds. I don't know. I was a stupid young monk. I wasn't smart or wise at all. And even goes to a really good university. You know, just when you go there, you go to the university, you hang out with Nobel laureates, and you go to Thailand, and realize just how much stupidity are in those great universities. They didn't know nothing compared to someone like Ajahn Chah. But anyway, so I just didn't know what he was talking about. He laughed his head off. Never ever scolded you, he thought, these people from the West are so incredibly dumb. And, you know, sometimes it's actually next Prime Minister, I always remember this one, they ask him, Ajahn Chah, can you speak any English? He said, no, I can't speak any English, it's probably time. Well, how come you've got so many Western monks? How do you train them? He said, well, training Western monks is so easy. It's just like training water buffalo. You take the string, you pull them this way, you push them that way, and they can do it. That's so true. But anyway, so after laughing, he looks at me again. Brother Watson, I'm going to tell you the answer. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. How lucky can you be? A great master is now going to tell you the answer to the question why. Not many masters are asked that question, let alone giving an authoritative answer. Granted the question why. What a great moment that was. And I was all ears, really listening. What is the answer to the question why? One of the great meditation masters of our age, in our being, to ask the question why. What is the answer? He said, come on, sir. The answer to the question why is, there's nothing. There's nothing. He looked at me and said, do you understand? He's really kind. Wouldn't mind to put me down. I'm down. Do you understand? I said, yes. He said, no, you don't. And he walked away. I felt so miserable and low. Just like a slug on the ground. I didn't want to win. Now these teachers, they're not stupid at all. He told me that. He asked the question, why is this nothing?
Yeah, I didn't understand what's happening.
But that was such an important teaching, so clear and so simple. Everyone can understand the words. And asked the question, it's nothing. Nirvana, actually. So, nothing. It's nothing here now, it's nothing here. Nothing. Nothing. So simple. So, do you understand? No, you don't. Think you do, you know. But anyway, remember that for one day it comes out of the world. Now you understand. When you're at least a student. Agile, confused, DE. Sandy McCarran, four foundation writings. The fourth thing, come on, you must know. What is this time referred to? What is that whole phenomenon in every situation then? Great question, because Western maps, they're always iconoclastic, which means you're not going to just follow tradition just because it's tradition. You're going to ask why. And great maps like Ajahn Sujata and Nariyo, Bhikkhu Bodhi, they start looking at all the other versions of the Satipatthana, not just in the Pali Canon, but other manuscripts mentioning the Satipatthana. And they found the earliest form of Satipatthana. It is really authoritative. The earliest form, which must be the most accurate, as though you've got two parts to the fourth Satipatthana, the Dhamma Nasana. The only parts they have is the seven enlightenment factors of the five emphasis. That's all, nothing else. No eightfold path, no, what are the other ones in there? But they're just those two. And you see, the later version, they add a few here and a bit there. So the original Satipatthana only had two parts, the fourth Satipatthana. Five emphasis, seven enlightenment factors. And the reason is because you have to be aware of five emphasis. That's what stops you being aware. You will find out, understand them. Know when they're there. As best you can, even though it's dark, know how to overcome them. Because once those five emphasis are gone, then the seven enlightenment factors are born. So this is where you are really aware of the things which block enlightenment and the things which you develop to become enlightened. Just those two. So you contemplate. You're aware. Have I got the hindrances? Or have I got the enlightenment factors? So you do that as part of that fourth set of time. Everything else, just those two parts. Five differences, seven enlightenment factors. That's the only original in the time of the Buddha for such a time. Fascinating. We're going much earlier back to the original Buddhism. And I know that Theravada came to say, oh, we're the early form of Buddhism. Mahayana had it so much. Vajrayana had it heaps. We are pure. No, we are not. We have had heaps as well. So the few, the really good ones, who are actually taking it back, finding out what the Buddha actually taught. And so most of the Pali Canon is right, for the Sutta figure, you've got to go back a little bit earlier to find out what was really chanted at that first council. And it's not that hard to do. And this is one of those great insights. Satipatthana, it's been added, but it's lost other factors of the fourth Satipatthana. Next question. Dear Ajahn, donuts. That is my nickname, as I said. So, since the world does not belong to us, why are we responsible for our karma? Because you think the world belongs to you. Because you think the world belongs to you, that's why you think you're responsible for your karma. That's why you can't hang on the bus. Because you think you did it. But, if you become a screen winner, at least, and you really know what we're talking about, there's nothing, there's no will. If you really become a screen winner, as you've seen that, rather than just taking some theory, then, your responsibility comes. There's no one there to be responsible. But until that time, responsibility is just the way you live their own life. And you can't just one trick the process. You can't just go up to a judge because you've been convicted of say, speeding and try and use it out of time defense. It wasn't me, judge. I wasn't speeding. You're a Buddhist, you should understand this. And then he says, well, you're in the car. No, my hand is in the car. You have your hands on the steamer. Well, my hands have just been onto the canvas. You have to get away that way. So, if you assume there is a self, if you do, that's how you live, then responsibility happens. So, that's why you hold your karma. That's why you can't be fearful. Some people think, oh, you've got to burn off your karma. That's usually the Jain tradition. Burn off your karma so you've got no more karma, you're going to be reborn. But also some people think, oh, you're just going to get rid of all that karma by burning off that karma. It's a terrible idea. You can't get rid of your karma that way. You just got too much. You've been accumulating karma for lifetimes. Mountains of it. Both good and bad. So you can't get rid of it. You can't let it go. Not my karma. This is how we do it. This is myself there. Thing which is holding the karma vanishes. I understand that even Ajahn Buddhadasa is a vegetarian. No, he's not, he's dead. Don't be meaning, not Buddhadasa. Anyway, I don't know who you're talking about. Why Mahayana practice vegetarian? Is it because they are towards Bodhisattva, but they are not a more focused on liberation of mind? That's probably a good point. If I can choose, do you think monks prefer food with no flesh or no meat? I've asked this question before. You can ask the monks. See what they need, what they can get. And then, I mentioned a few people. Ajahn Bambali is coming to BGF next. Then you know what he likes to eat. Salmon. He likes salmon. In fact, some of you said you like to go and see Ajahn Vajrayana, who was at a time, but she likes pizza. So, she does those things, so it's nice to go and take some months, what they like. They won't say, I get into trouble when I say what Ajahn Vajrayana likes. Ajahn Vajrayana, don't say that, I'm a monk, I'm supposed to have differences. Yes, you can't say, but I can say for you. And, when you come to Ajahn you can't say what you like. I can't say, oh, I just don't know. It's a deal. We've got all things out. We've got all the loopholes. Yeah, I'm based in a laboratory where people do research on tapping on people's free will to bring about a creative change. Healing and growth, we call that self-determination. Oh my goodness. All this while I've got the Buddhism teaches free will, which is very much in line with what I do professionally. I'm teaching this morning on no will, Vestia, greatly. Great. Could you kindly say the simple language on the Buddhist idea of human will? Is there free will? Of course there's not. If there was free will, who's making the decisions? Who's the person behind it? Well, if it was that Anatta. It's Anatta. It means there can't be anyone at the keyboard just deciding on things. You all know that, but sometimes there's a disconnect. Oh, no, we've got free will. What you can observe and assume is free will is not free will at all. Yes, I can observe a little choice going on in my mind, pick up the piece of paper. I can observe that, but that is not what initiates the action. I always thought I had free will, until one of the experiments done in Cambridge at the Psychic Research Society. We always got a hypnotist in every year. This is a hypnotist story. Amazing to see this. And the hypnotist, would make a few demonstrations, asked a few students up to be guinea pigs. I went up there, but I was not a good hypnotic subject, so I went back into my seat, thank goodness. There's always one or two students who just be hypnotized on the spot. Made them really stupid things. Great entertainment, but was also mean to kindness. One of these students, who the hypnotist put into a trance, and gave him the instruction that later on during the lecture, when the hypnotist touched his right earlobe, this student would stand up and sing the British National Anthem in a loud voice from beginning to end. That was the instruction. He said, you won't remember this consciously, when I take my earlobe, you will get up and sing the National Anthem. Then he took about a hypnosis, he went to sit down. Now, of course, even though he had been trained in the audience, no one would let him know what was going on. We were really mean, all to one another. And I myself was just waiting for the hypnotist to touch his ear to see what happened. And of course, soon he did it, he touched his earlobe, and this young student, in the middle of maybe a couple of hundred students, stood up and started singing, God Save Us, in a really loud voice, beginning to end. We were howling with laughter. It was the funniest thing we'd done all week. They were screaming in merriment. And did that stop this person? Not at all. If you did something like that, and everyone started laughing at you, you would stop straight away. Your face is that, one afterwards. This guy, no, he did it from beginning to end. We thought it was just a great joke. And when we sort of calmed down, that's when I got some goosebumps up and down my spine. Because the hypnotist then asked this young man, why did you sing the British National Anthem at that point? And this young man gave a believable explanation why he stood up and sang the National Anthem. It became so clear to myself and everybody else that this young man, it appeared as a free choice, an exercise of his free will. That's how it appeared, and he was convinced of that. Everyone else knew it was not a free will at all. He'd been hypnotized, conditioned, brainwashed. But he didn't know, he couldn't see. He was absolutely convinced it was his own free will. That is what really set the goosebumps up and down my spine. How can we know what is conditioned and what is free will? You can't. Later on, as a student, I had another experience. I saw on the TV an advertisement. I still remember to this day, St. Bruno Tobacco. These were the days before people knew that smoking cigarettes or tobacco was bad for your health. For me, it was cool. Trying to have a pipe with tobacco and smoking. It was a sign of your intelligence. Because even Einstein had a little pipe. So, even more than that, on this advertisement, it started off with an ordinary looking guy, not particularly handsome or strong or big. He was walking down the street and he took out his pipe, put in St. Bruno tobacco, lit it, and the result was so impressive. He walked past the newsagent selling newspapers and other magazines, and behind the counter was the most beautiful young woman you could imagine. And as soon as she smelt the aroma of St. Bruno tobacco, she was totally enchanted, jumped over the counter and followed this man, wanting to please his every whim. And then he walked past the greengrocers where there was this drop-dead gorgeous brunette. She also was enchanted and stopped what she was doing and followed this guy. And then past the bank and then past other shops. After only 1 minute, this ordinary-looking guy was being followed by the most desirable women a young guy could want. And I was only about 19 at the time. So, the next day, how stupid could you be? I was. I bought some Bruno tobacco. I put it in the pipe, lit it, walked down the street, waiting for the beautiful women to leave their shops and follow me. The only thing which followed me was a dog. I've been totally calm. I thought I bought that tobacco by my own free will. It wasn't. I was conditioned very much by the TV. How did you do it? His experiences like that started me wondering. He said, free will. Anything you do, is it really your choice?
What is it? Commission. Brainwashed. Not free will at all. Now, causes and conditions. That's what it says in the definition of mission. All causes and conditions. That is freaking. Right. It's true. Okay, let's talk about free will. What does your monastery need? My monastery needs, what does it need? Nothing. It needs more emptiness. More enlightenment. More peace, more freedom. No, just whatever. What it doesn't need, more robes, towels, toothbrushes. Chocolates. We got heaps of chocolate. So I'm trying to get rid of stuff. This robe, for example, this robe lasts about 2 or 3 years. I wear it a lot. Then it gets a hole in it and put a patch in it. And everyone thinks, oh, to give a robe to a wife is very good karma. I don't know where you got this from, because you think, oh, if I give a robe to a wife, then in my next life again, I'll get robes of good clothes in there. He doesn't wear it that way. You know, once in my life, only once, someone gave me a bottle of Johnny Walker and I had a secret. Whiskey. Totally unintentional. This Thai family, they just lost their father who liked drinking Johnny Walker, and they gave this big bucket of requisites, of toothpaste and soap on the top. And of course, I said, no, this is for my father, which just passed away. So one of his teeth, I sent him down the kitchen really, and I got it because I packed it. 5 or 10 minutes later, they came up and said, what's up, bro? This is what was in the bottom of the bucket. Sort of a bottle of Johnny Walker Gold Label or whatever it was, whiskey. So, what's up, bro? You have now broken all the precepts. You have received whiskey. And I didn't know anything about it, and he began, and I realized why I didn't do that. Because in Thailand and many other places, you think that if you offer, the only way to get whiskey up to heaven to their fathers is to offer it to a holy monk, they might receive it, and whiskey appears up in heaven like that. So they give me not what I want or need, they give me food on what I need so their father gets it over there. So, sometimes they give me this fruit, so please eat this. I don't like it. No, please eat it, because if you eat it, that's what my brother up in heaven many times. Thinking, you know, one thing they'd be doing. Don't you have eaten during this? I don't like it. I don't mind it. I don't particularly like it. Even the other things I like more. So I passed it down. And I got scolded. This woman came out and said, you didn't eat my jewelry, and that means my mother can't be doing up in heaven. You selfish mark. Doesn't work that way. Whatever you give to a monk, your kindness, it's like they get credit, they got credit card up in heaven. So no matter how much credit they have, they do whatever they want up there. You don't have to give white for life. You know, you don't have to give a robe, you get a robe up in there, you give a sort of you give some glasses or something. Up there they can use that money for whatever they want. So that's statistic, okay, but that's roughly what it was. So you don't have to give like for like. So just whatever you need to give over there. All of the maintenance over there is going to monitoring time and going to control. We always need to pay the electric bills. You know why? Because when people come from Malaysia and Singapore, they go into the rooms in Java Grove and they make it Singapore temperature. My goodness, how do you live like that? Don't you find cold? 35 degrees or whatever. Outside is now maybe 6 or 7 degrees. So it's incredible to get electricity bills. All you do after you've got $6,000 for 1 month. Just after the Singapore retreat. So that's always nice to look in the next year. It's huge. You've even got sort of solar panels on the roof. So that's after all the stuff we generate. But you know, you're cold, you need that heat because that's what you're used to.
So I said, please make use of it. I'll have my kid next time. I'll get it somewhere. So no problem. So I did it. How's it going? Ooh, 10 plus. Okay, I'll go to the middle. In the past, biography of Ajahn Marvin, by Ajahn Marvin, it says that Ajahn Marvin communicated with Arahants who also advised at already carried fun and prosperous came to see. This is the case that is a conscious after other than the strict consciousness of the power by his mind. The Buddha's now has been completely vanished without a trace. That book is very doctrinal, that life of Ajahn Marvin. In fact, even before it was translated into English, when it was in Thai, I was already told by some monks. Be very careful of that, because the person who even wrote it, it wasn't Ajahn Marvin, he helped write it, said that this is not what Ajahn Marvin said, but this is what Ajahn Marvin wanted to say, but wouldn't say. A lot of it was made up. So be very careful, people find it inspired, it's really hard to say, oh, that's not true, because there has some disciples, but just look what the Buddha said. Above all teachers, we have to have the Buddha. We take refuge not in the Buddha, the Dharma, and Ajahn Mahapur, but the Buddha, the Dharma, and Ajahn Mahapur. We take Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha as our refuge. So see what the Dharma says, what many other monks say. In fact, that very much, Ajahn Mahapur was a good teacher, but that doesn't make any sense. It can't be true. The Ajahn Mahapur, I tried out the Sinha meditation, casino meditation by going up the hill. Okay, so casino meditation. By visualizing the bright orange of the lanyards. By meditating to have a car, I visualize various shapes, textures, when it's looking for objects like orange rope or shoelaces, I was able to visualize the color even as thoughts came up. Associated with warmth, joy, and winter, however, I get a headache from doing this. If my eyes were as hard as to visualize this car, I was putting quite a lot of effort. Am I doing this correctly? And is this a general meditation object for you? Is it by sanctuary? Probably not. There you are. I'm not meeting with one person. My whole life, any person does consider meditation. You're actually sitting on a train, like on a small train, looking out of it, which had a blue color, and you're just really gradually closing your eyes, visualize it, and really in the meditation experience. It happens naturally, very quickly, no force. It just has an aptitude to be able to visualize color. So, some people have that, most people don't. Yeah, you can train. It's a very hard journey. It's much better to do the normal way, just to learn from it. Can we alternate walking meditation on metta with sitting meditation on breath? Of course you can. That's actually wonderful. To alternate whatever. So you don't always tell the same joke. I just alternate them. I tell a joke today, and then tell the same another joke tomorrow, and then the same joke again. Of course you alternate that. Can we send metta to something to something or something as a step instead of a vista and this is a step instead of vista and then this is. So you send it as a couple. So may Bad Angelina be happy in life. That's Bad Angelina Jolie. The fact that there's a Shinata. So can you do this like one cup? Of course you can. You can. May all beings be happy in life. You do it with all beings, you do it with them. Dear Adam, I am clear now on the enlightenment roadmap. You have answered many of my questions and made confidence in me. It's not easy to unlearn finally today on Friday. That's just been a long time of yesterday. That's only yesterday. Finally, on Friday, on Friday, I'm able to meditate with natural breathing without focusing on a particular point to sharpen my mind. Instead, I have to observe my natural breath and stillness. Thank you so much. Now, regarding the question I said yesterday, now I cannot read my breath anymore. I can say that. Where did the Buddha go to after this holy time? Same place as where the flames go to. Is there Bodhisattva in Buddhism? Of course there's a Bodhisattva in Buddhism. Many Mahayana monks and nuns, they sit in their temple and they enjoy themselves, they sleep a lot, they read books, and I come up to them and say, you think you're a Bodhisattva? What work do you do? How many temples do you look after? How many places do you go and visit? How many books have you written? And I said, you call yourself a bodhisattva, I'm more of a bodhisattva than you are. He said, actually, yes, you are, I said, Brahma. I'm a bodhisattva. I'm a bodhisattva. I go by one. It did happen one day, I admit this. It did actually happen. I was standing by the door of a half century first one day. There was an up Chinese New Year, and this Chinese lady came along. She loved my body. Stop laughing. I don't know if you got any good luck. I got my money back. What is that? Now, the Bodhisattva in Theravada is only describing the Buddha from the time he sent it from the Jusasudo to just before the enlightenment of the Buddha. Just from that period of his last life. Before then, he was called Bodhisattva. And if people want to know what Bodhisattva was like, this was Gatikara, Jyotipanna. This was the last, almost the last life of the Buddha. His castle was not that long ago. And even in this eon, there was a man, a future Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, he couldn't even respect a previous Buddha. He didn't know who he was. So that's how bad Siddhartha Gautama was in the previous life. The Buddha living really close by, he didn't recognize him until he was dragged by the pressure of Gatikara. It gives you another understanding of what a Bodhisattva really is in the previous life, previous to becoming the Buddha. He didn't even recognize the Buddha. So, honestly, compare Jyotipanna in the life that was a Buddha, he was going to become a Buddha. Comparing him to Donald Trump. Donald Trump could be a future Buddha. He doesn't have that many spiritual qualities now. Very unlikely, though. I had my first experience of meditation after 50 minutes. I seemed persuaded from that experience. In my eyes, the special will be acknowledged. His advice is very good. Carry on. So, thanks for having me. See, he's the left or the right. The most respectful action I have heard from the Buddhists, and I've seen that Christians are very caring and loving amongst their Christian fellows. Buddhists are more than themselves. Go to temples, make notes, and go home. But of course, there are a few kind of passionate ones. Of course, there are. Sometimes that's a bit. Go to the Buddhist fellowship. They're kind of here. Look after one another. Come to my temple. We look after one another. We have fellowship. That's what we call Buddhist fellowship. It's not just in Christianity, it's all over the place. So, but sometimes they're caring, some of you are Christian. Sometimes, some of them. Which is one of the reasons why some of them are not very caring when their father is dying. Father is dying in the hospital bed, he's a Buddhist. Do they care for him? No. They go around his bedside as a pastor, trying like anything to convert their father. It's a long time to convert something, dying, look after him. But no, sometimes the Christian children say, my goodness, if father dies as a Buddhist, he'll go to hell. It's our duty to convert him to being a Christian, so they try anything they possibly can to make him become a Christian. And it's just so hard for this poor man or woman in bed dying that all his people come out. That was happening some years ago. I remember telling the chief, Keshe Brahmananda, this, because we're all thinking, what can we do? And I came up with this wonderful solution. I remember the chief laughing his head off, thinking, yes, what a great idea. He said, very easy. He said, if that is you, Buddhist, you're dying in hospital, and somebody said, they're usually not the standard Christians, the Catholics, even those born again, evangelicals, the United States. And if they come up to you, you're dying, and in a week or two, I know you know things are going, you really feel sick, awesome. And maybe your son is a devout Christian comes up to you and says, Daddy, you must convert, you must convert, you must convert. You're going to go to hell if you don't convert. We're praying for you, please convert. It really is a pain in the backside that all these people want you to convert. So, my solution. Convert! On your deathbed, convert. think, okay, I'll follow Jesus, I'll be a Christian.
And then they will leave you alone.
And as soon as they're out of the room, then you convert back again. So they will sound like a child who runs away. Don't worry, go the other way.
And that's the
only way you can get rid of them. The two blood is a great idea. Even with the perfectly clean environment, if I teach about you, I can barely hold my attention on the beautiful place. Then I'm not even to watch more. When I get back to busy city last week, you said I just stick to better meditation in my daily practices, then when I'm back to the daily life. Well, be patient. You know, sometimes it's amazing people come on a retreat and expect to get a charm or they want their money back. It takes time, be patient. Every time they have a retreat, they have a bit deeper, a little bit more. And this is why they're doing it naturally. How do we deal with strong addiction to sexual pleasure and desires, especially when such thoughts keep coming through meditation? What way can we care or show kindness to our strength in such thoughts? Any sexual thoughts which come through meditation, write them down on a piece of paper, and I will read them tomorrow morning. People will be really interested. And that will soon stop them. What you're really doing is just wasting time, that's all. Because there's one of these monks, really well known, I don't want to say his name. They would meditate 2 hours every morning in their monastery. It was really crying, sometimes it was tired, it was hot. And so one morning, so there's another 2 hours, they decided to have a sexual fantasy. 2 hours. The time flew by. No aches and pains in his body, no sloth and torpor. Thinking about, I don't know what, but he's having a wonderful time. When the girl went 2 hours to finish, I'm getting ready for the arms round. I thought, I'm not going to go on this time. Because he had one of his teachers who can read. And he thought, oh my goodness, he's going to tell all the other monks about this video. And sure enough, the teacher got up and walked straight towards him. He was terrified. He knew his teacher read his mind, he'd be busted. What was he going to say? And his teacher just looked at him and said, you have just been wasting your time. And then walked away. He thought, wow. He was sort of scolding, but not embarrassing him. Just telling the truth. In those of our sexual times, you're just wasting time on time. When I meditate, I find myself very peaceful, but I do not find joy and happiness. I want it a because you're looking for it. Just enjoy the peace. What more do you want? Peace. It's wonderful. And then, oh my goodness, that is joy. Then I go, well, what is going to happen to all of us if you do not get reborn again? Who will teach us? The Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha will teach you. When I die, don't worry, YouTube will teach you. There's so many of my talks on YouTube. There's so many of the talks of people like the chief. He is immortal. You can get a book and read what he talks. So you don't need to see the person. One of the great sayings was, the one who sees the Buddha sees the Dharma. The one who sees the Dharma sees the Buddha. So what's the Buddha? Departs. Doesn't really depart, the Dharma is still alive, growing strong. So if you see the Dharma, you can see the Buddha. He was coming by 2,500 years ago. So unfortunately, you always see monks like me. Dear Ajahn Bhav, would you be open to, I know anyone would be open to being a volunteer for research study of what happens in the brain during stages of Dharma? That has been proposed before, but I'm not going to be a laboratory guinea pig. This is a problem, actually, that sometimes people want to look at that from a science perspective when really the science has to be got their act together again. It's nothing to do with stuff, it's mind. So you can't measure mind as physical stuff. So actually, basically, no. I've been asked for that before, but this is a deep reason why not. Last question! 9:23, got three of them. the most respectful action. That big burly man who touched you, if you say you don't want to argue with him, the one who came to him, I saw him on Facebook, going for rounds of bigger parts. His exposed arm is filled with tattoos, the prescription infected, the shaven head is out of danger, side to side. Now, I don't think that one. Because there's many, many marks on arms now. Some have got tattoos, but this guy was really, totally with tattoos. So I don't think it's that person. On the subject of tattoos, I got a huge shock when I was in London in October. I know I've got many devotees these days. But this one devotee, this London girl, Caucasian, she came up to me and she said, take a look at this. And she burned her arm. There on her right arm, she had this huge tattoo going from her elbow to her shoulder. Instantly recognizable. Me. She has a tattoo and a glove. Not a fake one, in a real one. The laugh! Now that is a disciple. So to come here again next year, will you come as interested? I want to see your devotion next year. That was so creepy, that was a disciple. I'm glad she had it on her arm, no other part of it. I don't know what people think of it. Okay, that's enough for tonight. I think someone could have sent me a photograph of it. I have to ask, put them on our webpage. It really looks like it. Anyway, let's finish.